Welcome. I call this September 15th meeting to order. Ask you to rise and join me in the pledge of allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members, please.
Yes. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Cha?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Ferreira has asked to be excused. Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes, I'm here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall has also asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa will be arriving later this evening. We have Mr. Klinkelaer?
Present.
12 members present.
Thank you. We have a fairly brief meeting if we can stick to the agenda.
There you go.
We've been meeting already a couple times, so hopefully we can get out of here and enjoy the rest of this evening. I do have one proclamation. This is to the Latino Heritage Month. And I believe Daniel is here. You can often receive it. And although Carlos is here, you can stay in the back and take pictures. Whereas Tompkins County is the home to an active, growing, and civic-engaged Latino community. Whereas this year, Tompkins County is proud to join the President of the United States in recognition of Latino residents in our community and nation for their profound contributions to our society at large. Whereas virtually every aspect of our community's life has been influenced by Latinos, whether in arts, culture, medicine, government, business, or volunteerism. And whereas the 400-year-old Latino culture, steeped in tradition and centered around principles of family and community, strengthens the fabric of our entire society. Now therefore I, Michael Klinkelaer, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the month of September 15, 2009 through October 15, 2009 as Latino Heritage Month in Tompkins County. And together with our entire community, join in celebration and recognition of the Latino community and salute the Latino Civic Association for its outstanding work on behalf of Latinos throughout Central New York. Thank you.
On behalf of the Latino Civic Association, we thank the Tompkins County Legislature for your support in proclaiming each year the Latino Heritage Month celebration in the Tompkins County. Now is the advertisement for everybody here. Please go to www.latinocivicassociationtc.org. for information on different cultural activities organized by the Association for Latino Heritage Month. On October the 3rd, we'll have a cafe concierto at the Women's Community Building in Ithaca, New York. We will have Latino music and food. That our food is the best. I'm going to leave it humble in that one. All events are free, so it's better for everybody. It's free. And it's free to the public, and you are invited, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. We have no more communications except what's in your folders. No special orders of the day, so we'll move to privilege of the floor for the public. And we have one speaker signed up in advance, Mike Lane.
Hi, Mike Lane from the Village of Dryden. Probably the strongest example of intermunicipal cooperation that Tompkins County participates in is our community college, which runs so well with its participation with Cortland County. We've had a good working relationship with that county, which I think is a good example. One of the things that has been done over the years is that the county legislature has appointed folks from its ranks to sit on the negotiating committees for the labor contracts, who then reported back to the legislature, carried things back and forth to those negotiations, as well as Cortland having appointed those. In the past, our personnel director was part of that as well. Some of the things that were done in the past with that were the broaching of the health insurance participation by employees. Prior to that, in the middle or the late 1990s, the college paid 100% of the employees' health insurance. Tompkins County felt at that time that it was important that the employees pay something toward their health care so that there would not be overuse or abuses of that if they knew that their costs would go up the same as that of the college and the counties. That's, as I said, one example of things that were talked about in negotiations. Recently, I've learned that Cortland County is of the impression that Tompkins is no longer going to go through that process, that it's not intending to have participants in the labor negotiations at the college, and that it wasn't intending to vote on the contracts. I hope that's incorrect information, but I want to let you know that that is circulating at the legislature. In fact, as I understand, the Cortland County legislature voted just the opposite of that in a resolution that they would continue to participate. So I wanted to bring that to your attention from an outsider who had heard this, and it was something that was concerning me, and I hope that you folks can discuss that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Do we have anyone else from the public who wishes to speak on the privilege of the floor? Seeing none, we'll move to county legislators who wish to speak. Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Mike, it isn't often we respond to the public or a former legislator, but I would dearly love to sit and talk with you about what went on over the past 2 years in terms of negotiations with the college and Cortland County. If Cortland County, and I'd be very willing to do that and explain the situation. There are some stories that are being spread around that are not accurate, and that's all I can say. And I would be very open and willing to speak with you anytime about that.
Thanks, Jim. Any other legislators wish to speak? Martha Robertson.
I want to publicly thank Congressman Mike Arcuri and his staff for coming to Dryden, namely the Varna Community Center, last Friday for a public town hall meeting on health care, and it was, I think, really very interesting and exciting, and we packed something like 200 people into this place that's supposed to take 140.
Oh.
Since it's all over, it doesn't, you know, it's okay. You know, they can't tell us not to do it again, so anyway. The conversation was extremely respectful and interesting. I learned a lot both from the congressman and from comments from the public. It was a real diverse set of opinions and questions. And I want to also thank Hank Goulet and Chuck Bartosz for being moderators. And it was just a great experience, and I hope, I think the congressman went away with a better feeling of what his Tompkins County constituents feel about this really important issue. And in line with that, there's an all-day event on Saturday, October 3rd on the Commons. I'm not quite sure what it is, some kind of a rally for health care reform. So look for public announcements of that. I'm not sure the details yet. And just one, I don't want to embarrass her, but I wanted to say hi to Damon Ferguson, who's, I think, our most loyal, along with Mike. Those who are the most loyal participants in our audience, both candidates for seats on the legislature, and people know Mike, but they not know Damon, who's running in Groton. So I appreciate that people are really paying attention, especially with the budget meetings. Thanks.
Any other legislators? Carol Chuck?
Yeah, a group of us got an email from a resident on Cascadilla Park Road that I'm not sure we all got, so I just thought I'd bring it up. It has to do with the emissions, the gas emissions and sense of pollution from the number 10 bus that runs now every 10 minutes up the route back and forth between campus and downtown. And I think it's a wonderful bus. When you're not sure if a bus is going to come and it comes only once an hour, there isn't a sense one can run out and quickly get a bus and have not think about the schedule. And so that bus route has been sort of an eye-opener in a town our size, that it can come every 10 minutes. But I was not aware that for the people who live along the route, the fact that it is so frequent and that they every 10 minutes have what are now mostly very large buses coming past their houses, up a hill, making noise, putting out emissions, affecting sort of the level of dirt and grime around their properties, was something I hadn't thought about in the past. And, you know, it is something that's part of our emissions are part of our master plan, and I know it's not something that we've looked at. I know it's TCAT. Transportation folks make these decisions about the buses and the size of the buses, but I just wanted to call to people's attention as something there are all kinds of considerations in the buses and how they're paid for and the size and the frequencies, but on that route that is so frequent, it's just this is just another factor that we're being asked to put into the hopper and consider. So I just did want you to call that to your attention.
Thanks, Carol. Will Burbank?
Thank you, Mike. This past weekend was the annual AIDS Ride for Life fundraiser. About 300 cyclists pedaled around the lake in varying distances, but many going literally 100 miles. I've done the ride a couple times myself. I know, Mike, you've done it several times as well. But it's been several years since I'd actually had been involved in any way, and my son came back because he's living in Boston. He rode when he was in high school, and he decided he would do it again. And so he joined these riders, and I was reacquainted with what a wonderful event this is. They raised, according to their website, $225,000, which is extraordinary for a local group. But beyond that, I was just really taken aback by the level of community support, the hundreds of volunteers that were involved, everything from helping the cyclists and being greeting them at various points around the lake to putting up an amazing meal at the end and offering massages, free massages for the riders at the end of the ride. So it's a great event. I would encourage anybody out there that has any interest to think about doing it next year. They'll be taking registrations for next year starting in March.
Thanks, Will. Leslie?
And the same with sort of the protecting health piece. Thank you for that on the AIDS Ride for Life. I do want to take this opportunity. We heard from our health department a few days ago just about the swine flu and hearing also in the news about the death of a Cornell student. When our health department was talking about the numbers, you know, I thought they were kidding. I remember somebody asked, "Did you say 60,000?" It sort of didn't register really well. But hearing the news report of 535 students being affected with it and one dying, it certainly is cause for us to stop and think about the amount of work and money that's needed to make sure that our community is safe from this disease. So clearly I do want to take the opportunity to say, and I'm really sorry, and I know we all are, to have heard about the student's death, and hope that we can all be supportive in helping to combat this. Carol TCAT, with the start of school, I want to give a big old kudos and appreciation for the vigilance of our law enforcement officers out there. A lot of kids are walking because the school district is, as we all know, because of their own regulations and budget cuts, have had to cut back on some of the bus services, staying within the regulations of a two-mile radius that kids can walk. And so we have a number of children who are walking, and it's nice to see our law enforcement folks out there helping with their safety, and not just the safety of the walkers, but the safety of those who are on the bus, so that people don't continue to just go as they were going over the summer months. So definitely kudos to them, and much appreciation. And as a parent who has a child who walks to school, it occurred to me how wonderful the TCAT bus pass is for students. For the entire semester, he can get a bus pass for $30 and use it at any old time, as long as he's riding the bus. And that has been wonderful, and I'm hoping that people are taking advantage of that to get their bus passes for students, especially the ones who are walking. So I really wanted to say those few things. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Frank Cordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the last time I'm going to make this announcement.
Oh.
Friday is the watch fire at Lansing Myers Park for veterans, well, anyone who wants to attend. So that's the last time you'll hear that one from me this year. You're all welcome, 6 o'clock. It's a nice time. Bring any flags that you'd like destroyed, because they'll do it at that fire. The second one is October 3rd is the monument rededication out here in DeWitt Park, and you're all welcome to that. The time hasn't been set yet, but the program is coming together pretty nicely. In light of what Leslin just mentioned regarding the H1N1, the swine flu, let me also, obviously, we're all touched by the passing of the young man up at Cornell, and the number of cases that they've reported is over 520, are over 520. Ithaca College had about 26 at the last count. Gary Stewart from the university has pulled together a presentation this Thursday night. It's at the Ithaca High School at the cafeteria. It's the Campus Community Coalition, comprised of TC3, Cornell, and Ithaca College. It'll be start at 7 o'clock, and they're trying to keep it to about 8:30. The reason is they'd like to have an extended Q&A with anyone from the community that would like to attend, and it's to address how the campuses are handling the, trying not to call it an epidemic or a pandemic, but how the local community could be affected by that. To show you also that our staff is also involved, a little later this month, Karen Bishop from the Health Department is coming to the Rotary meeting at noon at the Holiday Inn, and we'll give a presentation to the Rotary Club on how the community is handling that one. The clinics, as you know, are being formed. We still don't have, according to Alice, we still don't have the product yet, but the emphasis, of course, is on making sure that people between the ages of 0 and 24, 25, that's the prime target group, and then after that we'll go higher, and hopefully we won't see it here as badly as it has been in other places, but 520, actually almost 550 cases is bad enough, and a death. The seasonal flu clinics have been set up, and I have a flyer that I'll post for you if you haven't seen it already. That vaccine is here, and the clinics start on the 23rd of September. Please get the word out, particularly the senior citizens, if you can. By appointment, they'd like it by appointment, if you can. The phone number is on here, and encourage people to try to get this out of the way as quickly as possible. Alice has indicated that she'd like to have this done before we have to start the inoculations for the swine flu. I don't have an announcement about NYSEG tonight, except to say that we're still waiting to find out if they're going to do the Voice Your Choice program this year, which usually begins, you begin getting those flyers in the mail in October. But we haven't heard anything about that one yet.
Thank you, Frank.
You're
Julie
welcome.
Kiefer.
I just wanted to let listeners know that they shouldn't bother trying to set up an appointment for a flu shot at Lifelong. That filled up instantly.
Wow.
Oh.
Okay. Carol, talk briefly.
I just want to make sure I didn't give the misimpression that the person writing about TCAT and the number 10 bus was asking to have that route changed. Was there a way to have cleaner buses or smaller buses was the main point. And then on the flu, I just also want to make sure that viewers understand that I heard a presentation by the outreach person from Gannett Clinic. It was to the College Town Neighborhood Council. Most kids who are getting this are not getting as sick as, any sicker than any other flu. In fact, it's somewhat milder. These one case, there were complicating factors. And the campus is really rallying. I heard a presentation last Tuesday. By Wednesday or Thursday, a whole group of campus groups had come out and canceled activities. The Interfraternity Council had suspended the parties that had been scheduled. So people are pulling together. And both the CDC and the World Health Organization guidelines that Cornell is following is to not rush out to your doctor, not rush out to the hospital, but to stay home. Try not to infect people. And these very nice little kits are being handed out. There is help for people. If your friends are not available to bring you food and bring you the kits, the staff, you call in and the staff will bring you kits. So people should not be panicking. They should just be being careful.
Thank you. Do any other legislators wish to speak under privilege of the floor? If not, we'll move on to, we have no municipal officials, so we'll move on to our presentation regarding the health department building. We have Ed Marks and Earl Lamar.
Hi. I wanted to give the legislature members an update on the health department project. Construction started on the project last November. We did deconstruction, which was followed by renovation, in which we're in the midst of, and then we started site work last month. So the presentation is going to be brief. I've got several pictures of the progress of construction. Then near the end, I've got a milestone schedule, and then the budget, a budget update. This is an aerial view of the project. The building is there in the center. It has a wonderful pond view. The building was built in 1989. It's 33,400 square feet. The county purchased it for just shy of $3 million. We can go to the next slide. These are floor plans that you've seen in the past. The different colors show the different divisions of the health department. Community health services, WIC program, and clinics are on the first floor. And the main conference room is in the center of the building. It was designed so that the offices would be around the perimeter of the building and would take advantage of natural light. This project, as we've mentioned before, is a LEED project, and it will be the first LEED project for Tompkins County. We're striving to at least get LEED certified, which is the minimum level for LEED, which is leadership and environmental and leadership and my mind just went back. In engineering and environmental design. So we went initially for certified level, but after we worked with our consultants, Lavella, we were able to come up with a LEED Silver, which is the next level. So the offices are on the perimeter of the second floor, which is that following slide. We have administration. Environmental health is the green on the left, and the purple, or the violet, is children with special care needs and health promotions on the second floor. The next slide shows the original view of the building when we purchased it. As I said, it was built in 1989. We are doing a complete interior renovation of the project. That front canopy was removed, and the next slide you'll see what it was actually 2 days ago, what it looks like. We're putting this new canopy, which will actually have a vestibule. That's a code requirement for an airlock, so that will have this vestibule, which will be all glazed. We're also doing new asphalt and parking. Next slide. That's what it will look like when it's complete. It will have Tompkins County Health Department on the front of that canopy. Next slide. Those are views from the roof. The original roof was a membrane, rubber membrane roof with stone. This is, for LEED, is a white roof, reflective roof, which will minimize the heat gain in the building. One thing that was required for this project, because there was no space in the building for mechanical systems, is all the rooftop equipment is on the roof. They're very large units, and that's one issue that's come up with Cornell, that they say that they're unsightly, so we're going to be screening those units in the next month. That's the entry, the building atrium, as you come in, the main entrance, and straight ahead, those the windows in the back are the reception area. That's another view of the atrium. That's the skylight that brings in a lot of interior light to the interior spaces. Yes, that's the very top of the atrium. These are views from the second floor. The second floor is the one that's progressing the fastest, and so they've got the paint and frames in, and they're starting to put floor and ceiling tiles. This is a view actually from Alice Cole's office looking down the hall. That's another view of the south end of the second floor, which is not as progressing as quickly as the north end. That's a view from an interior clerical space looking in towards the atrium, and the elevator is off to the right in that atrium. That's the main conference room on the ground floor. It's not going to be all blue. The painters made a mistake. It's only supposed to be blue up to the chair rail. Everything above that is supposed to be kind of that white neutral color. That's a view from the first floor, which is not progressing as quickly. They've started from the second floor moving down towards the first floor. That's another view from the first floor. Around the perimeter there, there will be workstations, not cubicles, but furniture systems. So those will not be hard-walled offices around that perimeter on the first floor. That's the WIC waiting area looking down towards the WIC clinic space. One of my favorite shots, that's the boiler room. Those boilers are high-efficiency water-condensing boilers. And so we're quite happy with the system that we have in this building. The next slide is an aerial view of the site, and the next slide is the proposed site design. There's been some we've rotated basically the parking and also put in a drop-off just in front of the building. There's kind of a orange-colored area. I'm not sure if you can notice it. That's where the bus drop-off will be, and also drop-off for any clients visiting the building. Next slide is a similar slide, and it shows the signage. The signage has to meet the Cornell's sign requirements. So we have a sign on Brown Road as you come into the drive, then one halfway down the entry drive towards the building, and then one just in front of the building that will have all the divisions of the health department. Next slide, as I indicated before, it's a LEED project. Those are all the points or different categories for LEED and sustainable sites, water efficiency, energy and atmosphere, materials, indoor environmental quality, and innovation and design process. And the bottom number on the left, that 35, are the points that we're hoping to achieve through this project. To get silver, you need 33 to 38 points. We actually believe we will exceed the 35. But we won't know until the end of the project. That there'll be an audit, and so our hope is that we'll get on the high side of silver. Gold could be obtainable, but we're not shooting for gold at this point. The next slide shows the milestone schedule. The legislature approved that site in August of 2007, so a little over 2 years ago. Labella was awarded the contract for design services in April of 2008. And the building was purchased that same month. Design was completed in November of last year, and deconstruction started, as I said before, in November. It was completed in January, and renovation was started in February of this year, and site construction started in August. We are looking at completion of the renovation next month, in which the following month in November we would do a complete commissioning of the building to verify that the building is actually performing the way it was designed, which is a LEED requirement. And as well as in November will be furniture installation. Also, Greg's department, Greg Potter's department, ITS, will be working and doing phone and network installations in the building. And the move-in at this point is planned for early December of this year. This next slide is the budget update. The far right column is the 2009 update, which includes both actual numbers and also projected numbers. The interior deconstruction, that's an actual number, $324,500, which we didn't have any contingency used on that phase of the project. Building renovation, as I said, we're in the midst of renovation. We've got probably another month and a half to go. We have not used up the contingency. The project is going well. No significant unforeseen conditions arose on the project. Site construction, we actually got a great bid from Economy Paving that was awarded, I think, a month before last at just over $500,000. What was projected last November was double that number, $1.2 million.
Is the parking lot and landscaping portion included in this or not?
Yes.
Included in this?
Yes, site construction includes the parking lot, curving, sidewalks, landscaping, site furniture like benches, bike racks, flagpole, and we're also putting what they call no-mow grass around the perimeter of the lot, grass that we won't have to mow, which is for LEED points so that you're not using mowing machines to mow the grass. So, yes, that's included in site construction. Then we've got furniture, architectural and engineering design services are shown there. Owner project costs are basically all the other costs associated with the project. Phone service, utilities, testing services, insurance payments, IT equipment, all the phone and data switching systems are included in that number. Then we show the purchase of the building, and then the last number is what we're hoping to sell the building for, $1.4 million, for a total of $8.4 million. Correct. And then the next slide is just another aerial view of the building. The next slide I'll show you is the issue that Cornell has with that's basically looking from where their building is, their Cornell real estate, and you can see on top of the building the rooftop units. Now, I think those look great, but you're asking the wrong person. Those are wonderful rooftop handling units. They're Johnson York units, but I must agree, compared to the other units in the park, those are huge. So we have already gotten a proposal for screening those rooftop units. And we'll be meeting with Cornell shortly to show them what we're proposing.
Pam?
Who is doing the construction?
We have four prime contractors. The general work contractor is William H. Lane out of Binghamton. The HVAC is Piccarilli, Slavic, and Vincent, also out of Binghamton. The plumbing is Kimball out of Elmira. And the electrical is Concord Electric out of Rochester.
So we didn't get any local contractors?
No, there was, as you recall, in the electrical, there was one local that bid, was the second low bidder, which was Richardson Brothers Electrical Contractors. But they were the second low bidder.
Okay. Will?
This all started before I joined this body, but my understanding is we're owning the building but not the land. Is that correct?
Correct. It's a land lease, so we purchased the building, and we're leasing the land. It's just shy of 5 acres, and it's a 60-year lease. Roughly $3 million was to purchase the building and actually lease it for 60 years, and it's renewable for another 40. We have an option to renew for 40 more years.
So essentially 100 years. So,
yes.
Yeah. Is the exterior work being done by Cornell, or will we be responsible for plowing that?
We're required through the lease agreement to maintain the grounds.
I see.
And there's a certain standard for maintaining those grounds. Slightly higher than what our standards are for our county buildings, but it's something that we have to abide by.
And finally, is there any way the public can get some of that no-mow grass? Because I could imagine.
Sure, yes. Yeah, we want to see how it performs that first year before we try it on our lawns. It hasn't been used that much around here. Yeah. They say basically it grows 6 to 8 inches high, and it's very thin, so it lays flat. You may need to mow it twice, maybe in the
great.
Beginning of the
That's
season
great.
At the end.
And Frank Proto.
Is that for real or real?
Yes.
Could you put the slide back up that has the numbers on it? Thanks. I just want a couple of clarifications. The one that deals with site construction, can you say again why the 2008 update is if my glasses don't fail me.
Yeah,
it's about 1.2, 1.3 million.
Right.
And then the 2009 update is only a little over a half a million?
As you may recall, last year in the fall, asphalt and petroleum prices were an all-time high. And so when we were going out to bid for the building renovation, we knew that. And typically, site construction is included in all of our projects as part of construction and renovation. We decided at the time to basically remove that from the building renovation phase and separate it because we felt that we would get very high bids for the site construction. That was at the time what was projected the site work would cost, $1.26 million. So we held off, which was a good thing. It was a chance we took when we went out to bid then early this year, redesigned it. We were actually shooting for full reconstruction. The original 2007 estimate, the parking lot we thought at the time was in better condition, but after closer investigation, it turned out that the recommendation was to redo the entire parking lot, not just the area closest to the building. So that $1.26 million was to do full reconstruction. When we went out to bid early this year, prices had dropped, and it was much more competitive. Contractors were very hungry. And Economy Paving came with a very good number, and they're a quality contractor. They've done very good work on the project so far. But we've been very lucky that each phase of the project, we hit it just right. Deconstruction with recycling, we hit it just before recycling took a nosedive, so we got very good numbers on the deconstruction as well.
Okay. Well, not done yet. The last number, the 2007 Biggs assessed value, if one were to add that $1.4 million back in, which is that wasn't part of our equation when we originally looked at building a new building, am I right in assuming that 8.4 would be closer to 9.852? Just
correct.
adding
correct.
It back but in.
It's the same number all the way across in any scenario.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Mike Sigler.
I was just wondering about the furniture that's done, right? It's been out to bid and it's all
just not? About. I mean, we've actually have all the, we've ordered the furniture. We're finalizing like conference room tables and chairs, but we have all the proposals. So that number is a firm number.
I mean, I just didn't know if you had seen a big drop there too. Because I know locally furniture prices. I mean, this is a different, I know, it's. I don't know, if it's not apples and apples, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, the firm that we're dealing with is Sedgwick Business Interiors. They do a lot of work with Cornell at their state bid, so we're getting good numbers from them. But there were some increases because of metal, steel, back when we did the 2007 estimate.
Carol, then Martha, then Jim.
Yeah, two questions. I'm still trying to understand the parking. What I'm remembering is that the last time we saw the budget, that was taken out. So does that $562,000 now include all the other site construction that was necessary and the parking lot?
The site construction has included the park. That was the key component of site construction, was redoing the parking lot. back in 2008, we couldn't afford $1.26 million. So we had looked at different options. One option was what we called limited reconstruction, which was basically the area closest to the building that gets the most traffic, which was deteriorating the most. But the recommendation, both from facilities and from our consultants, was to do the full reconstruction. At the time, we couldn't afford the $1.26 million. So the decision that I made was to hold off and see how the building renovation bids came in. Our hope was that they would come in low, which would give us enough money to do a full reconstruction once asphalt prices dropped, which is what we did early this year. So the site construction, the key component was redoing the parking, as much of it as possible.
Wait, so that's all in there. You're not coming back to us with a later
Correct.
Phase, as we had thought. Well, that's great.
Right.
Thank
right.
you. And then I just thought another question. With the slide, you don't have to go back to it because it was a ways back, of the windows where you talked about the furniture and being modular furniture. Mm-hmm. Will that come above the height of those windows?
Not up against the windows, no. The counter will be just below the sill of the windows, and then the separation between adjacent workstations, yes, there will be a 54-inch partition. So it won't be full height, so that we can still get borrowed light into the interior spaces. And we could go back to the slide, but you may have noticed in some of those interior views, like right there, see on the wall on the left, there's glazing up high. That's actually the conference room just to the other side. So we're actually borrowing some natural light into those interior spaces. But part of the design is that any of the workstations on that perimeter will not have anything that will go above the sill up against the perimeter.
Martha, then Jim, then Frank.
Speaking of the conference room, that's on the first floor, you said, right?
Yes.
Is that something that, I can't remember the programming, would that be available for public, you know, for public meetings, do you know? Can you remember?
It can be. We designed it so in the floor plan at the very beginning. Let's see. I don't know if we've got a pointer. Any case, right there. It's off to the entrance is kind of in the middle on the lower. As you come in, that lime green just to the right is kind of a light brown with mm-hmm. a lot of chairs. Can you see that large space?
Yeah.
So we designed it so it's close to the front entrance in the atrium. All the doors off of that atrium can be secured through an access control system, so there's a schedule. And also, as you come into the building, we can provide temporary access for other groups to come in and only have access to the conference room.
So the next time Congressman Arcuri comes, we might be able to use that.
Yes.
I thought I heard back in the thinking about this was an idea about solar panels on the roof that didn't work out.
I had a slide here, but that we have looked at designing and including photovoltaics on this project. We'd hoped that the energy stimulus money that we had heard about that was coming out. There was one proposal that we submitted on a few weeks ago. However, this building, although it's hard to believe, is considered a new construction. The building's been vacant for a certain period of time, or is there substantial renovation? This building did not qualify for at least this latest NYSERDA proposal for renewables. So we had hoped initially that we could have submitted as a NYSERDA project. It did not qualify because it's deemed a new building. But yes, we have designed and laid out photovoltaic panels on the roof that would generate basically 48 kilowatts. But there is no funding in the capital project this time to move forward. That's about $400,000 to $500,000.
You may remember that recently you approved MEGA going out for a NYSAC County's bid on solar. They actually use this building and the airport as prototypical sites that the proposals will be submitted on. And so we will have the option of taking that proposal if we wish, and people may submit a contract like a lease or something like that, as we did with the Johnson Controls Energy Efficiency Program. We wouldn't have to put out money. So that's why we're kind of waiting. It would be more pay for itself as it goes is what we're hoping. from the savings and energy costs that we would get from it. But we definitely intend to, at the appropriate time, bring to the legislature a proposal to put the photovoltaics on the roof. But it doesn't have to be done during this construction phase.
Okay, because on the way down here on the radio, I heard something about 50% grants for photovoltaics for businesses and homes, and I can't remember the details, but
we're really keeping track of everything that comes out and looking for the opportunity for this building in particular.
Great, thanks.
Jim Dennis.
I just want to mention, Julie and I were on the committee for this project for many months, and I want to give compliments to Aurel, Ed, the staff, the designer. They did a really good job. I was a huge supporter of No Mow Grass, and they did a really great job knowing the financial constraints that the county had, and I think it was a wise move to hold off the bid on the blacktop given what was going on in the world. So I think staff, everyone did a really great job on this, and if the building works as well as the job giving us the building, it's going to be a successful thing for the county to have done.
Thank you, Jim. Frank Proto?
Jim, I hate to break this to you, but my understanding is that because of the altitude and elevations in the town of Ulysses, particularly in Trumansburg, the no-mow grass will not work there.
Well, I'm trying to do a pilot project in my yard.
We can probably get NYSERDA funding for that. What I wanted to ask you was back on the slide with the finances on it again. The numbers in the right-hand column say 2009 update.
Right.
Are those as of today, are those projections through the end of 2009?
Yeah, those are projected costs for each of those categories or line items. Some are actual, like the, as I indicated, interior deconstruction. That's done.
Because that's completed.
Right. And the sale, you know, we purchased the building, architectural engineering services, that's what we have the contract. We don't see any additional services there. The numbers for building renovation include the contingency there. So we don't expect to use all of the contingency. So some of those numbers will actually drop, but those are projected numbers. The contingency we have for building renovation is 5%, as well as for site construction.
So we got, hopefully by the end of the year, I mean, if I heard you right, the occupancy date is around November, December.
Right.
Will you be able to, by the first of the year or sometime in January, give us actuals?
Right. Oh. And the actuals, as I said, I mean, it will be lower than the 8.4 plus 1.4 million. Because I guess we're back. It really depends what we sell the building for to 8.4, but the 4.5 million for building renovation and the 562,000, our expectation is those numbers will be lower once we complete the work. It's hard to believe at this point that there'll be any unforeseen conditions because we're so far along with building renovation, site construction. I mean, something could develop. We have a drainage issue, but we think we've resolved it. The only issue so far with Cornell, as I indicated before, is the screening of the rooftop units.
The mechanical, yes.
But that is already included in those numbers as part of our contingency.
Good job. Thank you.
I think it's exciting that we're basically hitting our budget.
Yes.
I just want to really commend Aurel. As many of you may know, during most of this project, Aurel didn't have an assistant. And so on top of managing all of the other county facilities, he was managing this major construction project and really trying to work the numbers to make it work for the community in a cost-effective way. I think it's going to be a great building. Everything is coming together very well, and Aurel deserves a lot of credit for all of his efforts, extra efforts, way beyond the call on this one.
So Dooley and then Pam had a hand.
Could you describe the screening that you're proposing?
When Cornell raised the issue, now understand, we provided drawings to Cornell at every step of the way. It was part of our lease agreement to share with them the plans and specifications for the project. So we submitted deconstruction, which they weren't too concerned about because it was all interior. When we did the building renovation, we shared the drawings with them. I went over with the Corner Real Estate group, and it showed the rooftop equipment. We indicated when we bought the building that we would be putting rooftop equipment, that we would try to center it as close to the center of the roof so it would not be as visible from around the building. Now, from the parking lot side, you cannot see the rooftop equipment as you approach the building or come into the building. But at this distance, you can see rooftop equipment on any building. And I drove through the park, and there you see rooftop equipment on other buildings. Granted, they're smaller units. Most of what I see in the park is probably 3.5 to 4 feet high. Those units are 6.5 feet tall. In order to basically condition the entire building, we needed large units. So what happened is once those units were installed, they indicated that those were it was a visual impact, that pond view was the focal point of the park. So they had a big problem with that. And legally, actually, they can force us to do that. I was willing to work with them, but I did tell them in our meeting was that at this point that it would be cost prohibitive to do any roof roof reinforcement. We've got ductwork. There's so much in the ceilings now that to reinforce structural beams would be costly. So I said that we would look for a system that could be mounted to the what we call the curb of a rooftop unit, what it sits on, and that if that could work, then that we would move forward with looking at that. But that the county was not looking at spending a lot of money to screen. They were okay with that, but they said this is a serious issue and it needs to be addressed. So anyway, we did come up with a company that can mount a screening system to the curbs of these rooftop units. They're lightweight. It had to be under 900 pounds. The system that we have is 830 pounds. What we are proposing is only to screen the views that are most objectionable, not all four sides. So it would be the north view and the west view. So basically it's what you see from this view, which is looking east, which would be the west view, and then the north view. And I talked to them this morning that this is acceptable to them, that we just screened three of the units. There's four large ones, so we're only going to screen three of them on two sides for each of them.
Could you describe the screening, please?
The screening will be full height of the unit, so it's about 6 feet high, and they're basically horizontal slats. Cornell actually gave us a sample of what they wanted it to look like. I think it's the Bionics building, or as you come into Brown Road, or maybe it's Avion, as you come into Brown Road, the first building on your right before you take the right into the park, that building has screening, so they want us to match that type of screening.
Thanks.
Pam Magazine.
That's okay, I pass.
Carol, do you have a quick question?
Oh, yes, it had to do with the lawn maintenance. That area is a migratory stop for geese, which are beautiful. You see them coming in. They add an ambiance. But I am wondering whether we're responsible, although we won't be out sending Jim and Frank out mowing the lawn. Will we be sending them out with bags for the goose?
Well, actually, it's not a migratory point
droppings.
Anymore. Part of the agreement to purchase the building was that the Cornell take steps to basically remove the geese from the property because actually they were flying over the building. There were droppings in that front entry area. Mm-hmm. So they hired an individual that has dogs every week they go through the park to rid the park of geese. And it's been quite successful. I saw a few just Monday, but very few. They say that initially last year they said they were spending $12,000. This year when we reminded them that as part of their agreement, they have to actually pave a walkway from Brown Road to the building. That was part of their agreement to provide that. They haven't done that yet. But they will be doing that. They will be doing that next month. But in any case, they said that this year they're spending $20,000. So they were trying to get out of paving the walkway, which we indicated that was a requirement that was one of the stipulations for the project.
So this is the county dog park? Is that what this is?
Could be.
But in the contract, they are responsible, not us.
For the geese.
For the geese.
Control, correct.
Yes. Thank you.
Any more questions? Thank you very much. Thank you, Ed. We will have an executive session later on this evening related to this topic, related to Biggs Building B. Ready to move on? Under Chair's report, I also did want to commend those who rode in the AIDS ride, but it's really also tied to women swimming, that these major events in our community are pulled off mainly through volunteerism, mainly through people donating far and wide for assisting essentially health-related issues, hospice and AIDS, and I think it's not insignificant how much the community has to put out to augment our health system. So I applaud those efforts, and I also think that it's very timely for us to be paying attention more and more, given what's going on at the national level, given what's going on in our community regarding H1N1. Several of us will be going to NISAC tomorrow. I think Martha, Leslin, Pam, and I, if you have any topics you want us to be sitting in on meetings, please let us know. You've all gotten a schedule of what those meetings are, so we can try to divide and conquer what the information. I actually think Norma might be going up for a day as well, so let us know if you want us to bring back materials. Finally, we have regular meetings, as I think you're aware, between Cornell and the county, about quarterly, just to update each other on progress, look at topics of mutual concern, and you've not gotten an update probably in a year and a half or so. So we had a meeting this week. I will look at the minutes from the last 3 or 4 meetings and do a quick summary so you can get a sense of those topics and be updated. But those minutes are available in entirety if you would like to see them. Nothing else for my report. I have no chair's appointments. We'll move on to report from County Administrator Joe Mariana.
I have no report tonight.
Thank you, Joe. And County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I have no report, but I would like to request a brief executive session on a litigation matter.
Thank you. And David Squires, Finance Director.
Just wanted to announce that the county's financial audit is posted on the county's website. If you click on their budget tab, it takes you to financial information where it's posted there. And also I wanted to note that next Tuesday, September 22nd at 4 o'clock, the Tobacco Corporation will be holding its annual meeting.
All are welcome. If there's no questions for David, we'll move on. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? I don't see any. I'll move to the consent agenda. We have one appointment, and we have, five consent resolutions. One of them is revised. I'm going to read A and B in a different order because they belong on the agenda in a different order. For appointments to the Environmental Management Council, Roberta Dixon. And for resolutions on the consent, we'll read Resolution B, acceptance of grant from New York State Housing Trust Fund Corporation for the RESTORE program. Resolution A, acceptance of legislative initiative grant for home repairs for low-income seniors. Resolution C, this is the revised version in your folder, budget adjustment, Department of Social Services. That revised brings the explanation up into the body. Resolution D, establishing county equalization rates. And Resolution E, adoption of regular and supplemental reports of totals, that is, footings of assessment rolls. Who would like to move the consent agenda? Frank Proto moves it. Dooley Kiefer seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. We'll go on to, I think Ed's probably here for a transportation piece. Okay, you're going to wait for that. All right, we'll go to the regular agenda then. So we'll actually start with Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean,
we will meet next Wednesday.
Okay. If there's no questions, move on to Legislative Rules and Procedures Committee. Dooley Kiefer, Chair.
Our next meeting is this coming Monday.
Thank you.
What time, Julie?
Any questions?
Two.
Frank Proto, Health and Human Services Committee.
Oh, thank you for making up all this time, because we had a committee meeting. Sit back and enjoy this. The committee met, and I do have a couple of updates for you. We discussed at the meeting with the health department the open. Remember, a couple of years ago, this body passed and actually endorsed the health department's proposal on open burning and burn barrels. There's an update that's being proposed the DEC has come out with suggested regulations, and the Health Department is currently reviewing those. The basic change that's being proposed is in relation to agriculture. Pardon me. They're trying to make sure that the burning of tires and plastics are now going to be under control. The burning of wood products, you know, for clearing fields and that type of thing will probably still be okay. But the major change is addressing the disposition of, you know, if you drive along the road and you see those sausage-like white containers that contain round bales, once those are open, disposal of that plastic has become a little bit of a concern. So rather than burn it, Farm Bureau has latched on to a piece of machinery that actually can bale this stuff and probably shred it at some point, but so that the farmers don't have to burn it, and they're willing to move that from farm to farm on a prescribed appointment basis. But at any rate, I thought you'd appreciate knowing that the open burning consideration is coming back. It's coming back in a slightly different form, probably a little more highly regulated, and it is directed primarily at agriculture. When that hits, I'll be sure to let you know, or someone on the committee probably will. You've heard what I'm going to say tonight already about H1N1. Alice did give us an update on that, along with Sigrid Kerr. I think that you're probably as aware as I am, but the reminder again is make sure you wash your hands often. We had a number of announcements that were positive with regard to updates on grants that have been received. Nancy Zaylor's department has received a drug prevention grant. It's $125,000 a year for 5 years. We heard a similar item from Lisa Holmes in COFA, the ones that you just passed, the state Housing Trust Fund Corporation grant, the legislative initiative grant for home repairs. The biggie is from DSS. Some of this was reported in the media already. It's a $2.4 million grant over a 22-month period to address housing for people that are in critical need of housing, that are at risk. And DSS is collaborating with Tompkins Community Action, Catholic Charities, and the Human Services Coalition. It's for the rapid residency, in other words, to keep people within their residence if there's a critical need. And was good news. It was very, very well received by Patricia. Excuse me. We did get to meet the new director of the Red Cross, Barry Stein. Seems like a very nice guy. He's very energetic and very enthused. And there was some time spent by Betty Falco from the Human Services Coalition with regard to an update on the chronic diseases that are going through the nation at this point. And she distributed some brochures regarding healthy living. We also, from every month, receive a packet of information that some of us, we weren't receiving it for a while, and Patricia agreed to reinstate it, on the statistics that go through DSS. And Joe has reported from time to time, most recently, of course, about the increase in food stamps and in the need for social services. We had some good news from the representative within DSS who's dealing with a new computer system that is going to help get people into the system faster so they can receive, and more accurately from what I recall. The problem is I don't remember what the system is called. But it's going to be activated here relatively soon, and they're pretty excited about it. It'll save some time, and it'll be extremely efficient from what we've been told. I just wanted to announce, too, the next regular committee meeting is October the 13th, but I've scheduled a special committee meeting on the 23rd at 3:30, and this is and the meeting is going to be in the conference room, the third floor conference room of the health of the Human Services building. That meeting is, and this is for the members of the committee specifically, that meeting is scheduled to review only budget items. As of last night, we have heard, the Health Committee has heard from every department and some agencies that report to that committee, with the exception of the Human Rights Commission. So what I need you, we'd like to send a brief agenda out and also alert the departments that you'd like to hear from. This is the homework portion. We don't want to invite every single department back in to make another presentation, because I think we all got it from what we've already heard. This meeting is set up to address any questions the committee has about specifics within a department, and I hesitate to say this, in any agency. The thing I need to avoid, and I think you do too, is with all due respect to the agencies, with the number that we saw in that spreadsheet that Kathy distributed last night, we don't really need a parade of agency people, and this may sound crude and cruel, and I don't mean it that way, explaining to us how tough, we know how tough it's going to be on the agencies. If that's the only message that we're going to receive, we get it already. The committee needs to hear specifics. If you have a particular item within a particular agency or department, please let Karen Fuller know tomorrow, if you can. We need to get this agenda out, and I want to give any department enough time to react and schedule in so we can massage it by Thursday, and we know how much time we have to allot to each one. I hate to sound like Simon Legree, but in deference to the departments that are already presented, we really want to respect their time, too. And I wanted to get, knowing that some of you are going to NYSAC, I really wanted to get this out as quickly as possible so you could give some thought to it and get back to Karen by tomorrow, hopefully before you folks leave.
Frank, on that, you gave a date of the 23rd. Which month? Are you talking September or October?
January. September. It's a Wednesday. A Wednesday afternoon at 3:30. And the concern that was raised at the committee, and I understand that this has been alleviated somewhat, is that this meeting runs right at the same time that Leslin's WDIC meeting does. And the reason we scheduled it at the Human Services building is because that committee's meeting is also there. And if we have departments that need to do double duty, they don't have to run back and forth to the courthouse or wherever else just to try to respect their time a little bit. So, all kidding aside, Carol. Yeah. Carol, all kidding aside, it is September 20th.
Week from tomorrow. Okay. Any further questions for Frank? Thank you for your report. Move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Leslin McBean, Claiborne Chair.
FMI will meet on this Thursday. And I will not be there again. I apologize. I will be at NYSAC. And so we are hoping that there will be enough members of us for a quorum for us to do business. We have some leftover business from our last committee meeting, which I'm going to ask Dooley to share. We think it's interesting information. And so I'll ask Dooley to share with us from the last committee meeting about highway and hogweed.
Oh, yes. Well, I remembered to ask staff to put in your red folders the DEC colorful article on giant hogweed. But the report came so late in the meeting, I forgot to tell you anything about it. And what the reason that it came up at Facilities and Infrastructure is that Bill Sesney reported on it. He reported on the hazards of the plant and the fact that there are about 1,000 plants on Nemi Road. and he worked with the DEC to determine the best method of removing the things because you don't want to touch them. There are volatile chemicals that you get on your hands which can give you really severe burns. So the first thing they did was deadhead the plants. They cut the seeds off. So at least they've stopped them from spreading at the moment, but they still have to remove them. And there are other sites in the county that they've been this plant has been identified at, but Nemi Road was a huge infestation. Hmm. So I'm sorry I forgot to tell you why you had that piece of information in your in your folders.
Thanks, Dooley.
Yes.
Thank you, Dooley. Thank you, Leslin. Because the committee will be short, I may ask members of the committee from last year, maybe Carol, if you would consider joining the committee temporarily as a member. We can speak after the meeting. I think we only have...
this Thursday?
All you need is three.
I can't.
Well, I think we may only have two at this
really?
Point. You can't make it. Okay, I'll talk to people after this meeting to see who can sit in on that meeting on Thursday. Thank you. Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee, Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Yeah, the committee decided to cancel its last meeting, and so, and I believe there was a special meeting prior to the legislature meeting, which I was not able to attend, so if anybody wants to report on that, they may. But if not, we will be meeting 1 month from now.
Anyone wish to report on the meeting before this meeting?
Sure. We met, and that's why you had Resolution D and E able to be voted on tonight.
All right. Okay. And they were non-controversial, which is why we thought that we could do them before the legislature meeting.
That's great.
Instead of have dedicate 2 hours of the meeting.
That's an effective use of people's time. Thank you. If there's no questions, move on to Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee. Pam McAsee, Chair.
Yes, we met last week, but I'm not going to tell you what happened. I'm going to tell you that at the next legislative meeting. Tonight I think I would just like to put forward a resolution, and what I'd like to do is move it, and then I'd like to say a few things before we move on it. So this is Resolution F. It's the revised version in your folder. It's in support of New York State Department of Transportation Reasonable Access Highway Regulation, and I so move.
And seconded by Carol. Is there discussion or comment? Go ahead, Pam.
I just wanted to point out, and this is, I say this as much for our listening audience as for my colleagues, there's been a fair amount of confusion over the 25-mile limit or inclusion in the regulation, in the proposed regulation. And I just would like to explain that what that 25-mile limit means for Tompkins County is that if a truck travels up Route 81 and goes from the Whitney Point north and then across on 20 to Seneca Meadows, it is less than 25 miles longer to go that way than it is for them to cut through the Finger Lakes region. So that is the rule that they have come up with for all of the roads that are included in this regulation. People have been very concerned that this is a loophole, and there may be loopholes, but I don't believe that this is it. I would like to say that one thing I would just wanted to include is that the 25-mile limit was the one of the criteria that was used, but also was used the fact that the number of truck accidents, the number of truck pedestrian accidents, and the number of truck fatal accidents on at least Route 79 and 89 are higher than the state average. It was one of the criteria. It's not something that has been talked about very much, but it is higher. And finally, I just wanted to say that in all my excitement of having this before us tonight, I forgot to bring the critical information for people to write or email their comments, because of course we have until the 9th of October to include our comments, and this resolution will be part of those comments. But if anybody would like those that information. They are welcome to call me at home. My phone number is in the book, and I will be glad to give them that information. But the final thing I wanted to say was I have talked to a lot of people over the last 4 years about this issue, and I just wanted to quote one paragraph. It was from a family who live out in Dryden, and this is what they wrote. They wrote, "Dear Ms. McAsey, our frustration level with the truck traffic is getting unbearable. It seems that instead of getting better, since there is an awareness of the problem, it is getting worse. There are even more trucks, and they are now disturbing our sleep as well. We are getting to retire and downsize. Our house has been on the market for 3 years, even before the market tanked. We have dropped the price drastically. The feedback we always get is, lovely, we love your house and your grounds, but we can't live with the road noise. We can't give it away. We hear about trucks and commerce rights and financial hardship. How about our financial hardship? How about the impact on our health, safety, and sanity?"
Thank you, Pam. I think I had Jim, then Greg.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pam, you mentioned Route 20 in crossing over from 81. If I'm remembering correctly, Mayor Skinny Atlas was one of the leaders in this whole opposition. How are they going to fare with what's going on? Because 20 goes right through the middle of Skinny Atlas.
May I answer?
Sure.
The main way that the trucks were coming onto Route 20 was when they were coming up the east and west sides of Skinny Atlas Lake. So it was Route 41 and Route 41A. And so both of those roads will no longer be available to the trucks. So they will have to go up to where Route 81 intersects with Route 20 and then go west. And if you remember, there's a very large hill coming out of there. And right. So there's the possibility that might deter them. But it's also true that the mayor is very well aware that this is the case. And they have a permanent traffic inspection person.
All right. Thank you for that.
Okay, we're focusing on the resolution before us with revised F. I have Greg Stevenson next.
I support where this resolution ultimately goes, but truthfully, I could do without most, if not all, of the third whereas. And I thought I would suggest to see if it was friendly with the mover and the seconder, if we changed a couple things, would make it easier for me to support. I would suggest changing Jake brake to engine brake. I would also suggest maybe substituting tearing up with something like damaging. I don't know.
Okay.
It sounds fairly sensational in the third whereas, and I just I thought if we stayed more objective and less, I don't know if that's friendly or not. But
it sounds friendly to the mover,
that's
Carol.
That's fine. Yes.
Friendly to the seconder. So those are now changed.
To me, I have a question about is a Jake brake the same thing as an engine brake?
A Jake brake is like Kleenex. Jacobs is a manufacturer of engine brakes. So Jacobs engine brake is usually called a Jake brake. So
thank you.
It's like saying facial tissue for engine brakes, I guess.
Okay. People have those words different. The word engine has now replaced Jake, and the word damaging has replaced tearing up. And I have Nathan next, and then Carol.
Yeah, I just want to say I think that it's amazing that this regulation has finally got to this 45-day comment period and will soon be a proposed, an actual regulation. And I remember starting working on this, 2 years ago in Assemblywoman Lipton's office as a legislative aide, arguing with Senator DeFrancisco and others, and then eventually coming together on this issue, which was really interesting. And I think what made it successful was that you had people like Pam there, representing us in the Upstate Safety Task Force, alongside, and Pam, who's a progressive Democrat, with alongside conservative Republicans. You know, you saw the Chamber of Commerce coming, coming out for these regulations, and you saw a diversity of other types of groups supporting this, these regulations as well. And so it's got to this point because of the diversity of people really just concerned about a quality of life issue. And that's how it's got to this point, and it's been successful so far in pushing this these regulations. For the 45-day comment period, I think it's important that as many people do submit their comments in that same fashion. You know, that we have people from all types of backgrounds representing all types of organizations, trade associations, whatever, in support of these regulations. Because having that strength of diversity will help us push and finally get past this 45-day period and into an actual real regulation. So that's all.
Thanks, Nathan. Carol?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure people understood that this regulation, the state and the federal government worked together on this to address the issues that had come up about interstate commerce. So this is something that has met the requirements for both New York State and the Interstate Commerce Commission. And so that was a success story. And then I want to make it clear that the questions that people are asking about local truck traffic. Local truck traffic will not be affected. If you need a local delivery, if our dairy farms need to get feed and milk out, that is not affected. This is non-local truck traffic. And then I happen to have the information here about the deadline and the addresses for comments. Regardless of what your comments are, the deadline is October 9th. There are three ways to communicate your comments. There is an email address, which is truckregcomment, all one word, truckregcomment, at dot.state.ny.us. There is a phone number, 518-457-2345, and the mail address is New York State DOT 5050 Wolf, W-O-L-F, Road, Albany, New York 12232. And I encourage people, this is the single most frequent issue I hear from constituents on, as I was carrying petitions this summer, nominating petitions, beautiful days, out in yard after yard on both sides of Route 79. We could barely have conversations with the trucks coming through just about every minute. It's appalling. So local trucks are not the problem. It's the ones passing through. So thank you again to Pam and Nathan and everybody else who's been involved in this issue long before I got on the scene here.
Thank you, Carol. On to Frank, and then I think Pam has one last comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to, at the committee, there was compromise reached to change a few words in order to address the concerns that I raised regarding agriculture. And I want to thank Martha for at least making an attempt at softening the language a little bit. I've done since then a little more research on this, and I just wanted to let you know that, at least report to you, that this is like physics. For every action, there's not, unfortunately, this is not an equal but an opposite reaction. This started because of the concern about garbage trucks, and there was a new phenomenon that was introduced to our communities, IES, because of delivering trash to Seneca Meadows. And I live right on 79, so I can appreciate the concern about the garbage trucks. There are more trucks simply because they've added those. The concern that I have is, and it's the same concern I've raised before, it's the impact of this particular regulation on movement of agricultural products. I'm not talking about local deliveries where you're picking up milk with a milk truck, or you're delivering grain locally or whatever. And it was something we began to discuss at the committee. What I've found is that, as an example, and I have a couple of examples here, there's a farmer in Interlaken that's delivering product to Whitney Point, and he doesn't have a local delivery in Tompkins County. But in order for him to comply with this regulation and get his goods to Whitney Point, it's going to cost him an additional $120,000 a year to use the alternate routes that have been prescribed. That's because of gas and whatever else is making up that the total. He's a fruit and vegetable deliverer. It affects apple deliveries that are going through the downstate. Not everyone stops at Wegmans to drop off produce in that regard. But differentiating between, and a lot of trucks pass my home. I see Wegmans trucks, I see Lowe's trucks, I see Home Depot trucks, and they're all tractor trailers going through. And they've obviously come from someplace else, but most of those have what we are considering a local delivery. I called Farm Bureau and spoke with, let me give you her title, Nicole Willis, who's the Assistant Director for Public Policy for Farm Bureau in New York State. And she was very candid about wanting to comply with the regs. There's no doubt that they very much want to comply. But the concern also, and she used the example of the apple delivery of apples. She said in order for someone coming with apples, and it could apply to this gentleman in Interlaken because of the vegetable type of product that he's delivering, he has to buy a specially refrigerated truck, because you can't deliver apples if they're tainted, obviously. And the added time and the added cost of that could seriously affect anyone that's in that type of business. It's something I hadn't thought of, and something I would suspect most of you hadn't thought of either. But she also raised these truckers going through, stop for gas, stop for food. And I know that there are two large truck repair places that I'm familiar with. One is Crispell's Automotive down on Route 79. And you guys all pass that if you're going someplace. Mm-hmm. The other is Caskey's in Dryden on Route 13. They do repairs on these types of vehicles. And if they're diverted to other routes, what I was told by Farm Bureau, and this is true across the state, there's going to be some sort of a loss of income locally.
So it sounds like you're moving towards not supporting this or making a motion.
I'm trying to explain what some of the concerns from the agricultural industry are. At any rate, you know, I won't read you all of the material here as some others do when they read statements, but I wanted to at least let you know that they're very concerned. Farm Bureau is very concerned about the effects statewide, and that while we can't separate and selectively implement this, the original intent, remember, was the garbage trucks. But they can't be identified and separated out because of the impact on interstate commerce, I think the way Nathan described it. So I'm not going to support this because of the implication. What I would like to suggest, because there's still time in the comment period, that we might want to suggest that alternatives to, if we're going to divert trucks to other routes, that we might, and this one of these was already mentioned, that we give an incentive to the truckers, lower tolls on the throughway, or give them an incentive to use those routes, perhaps give them a break on the gas prices to do something in that regard. This one is very close to where I live. As you're going past the Caroline School, some of you will remember there's a firm called Lott, L-O-T-T, Trucking, right on Route 79. They are out of business. There was something like 42, you want to buy a tractor trailer, they're all up for sale. There's one driver, and they're not all men, there are women that drive those trucks too, that are, they're done. They're pulling out. every piece of equipment is up for sale. And that's the kind of impact that this kind of legislation, they just don't want to deal with this because it's too expensive for them to have to deal with it. And we've lost yet another business in the community. Not a huge one, but it, you know, a lot of these small ones make up big ones. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And they also, by the way, haul agricultural products, but they haul a lot of other stuff too.
Thank you, Frank. We have three more speakers. I have Martha, Jim, Will, and I think Pam still has another very brief comment. So, Martha.
You know, I was looking for the deadline information, so I pass.
Jim Dennis.
I'm going to bring, there are two things. One, this, I'm going to support this, but it's only worth the paper it's written on if it gets enforced. And the second thing is, we were having a conversation back here. If I'm delivering apples in Whitney Point from north of Whitney Point, then I should drop by Wegmans with a box of apples because now it's a local delivery. And I think the people in this business and trucking business are going to figure out not how to beat the regulation, but how to live with it. And I think that's the point that we need to make about this regulation. Clearly, it was about garbage trucks. And there's not a person in the world who's in the business of patrolling highways who can't tell the difference between a garbage truck and a produce truck. And there may be selective enforcement, but then people are going to have to deal with that in the courts. And I think to not support this is to turn your eyes away from all the trucks that go by your house and all these other things.
Thank you, Jim. I have Will and Pam.
Thank you, Mike. I am going to support this. I'm fortunate not to live on a truck route, but I have many, many times been sitting at intersections and been passed by one, two, three sequential trucks. It is certainly about garbage trucks. There apparently is not a way to focus just on that problem, but this seems like a reasonable attempt, and I hope that at least short-term it improves the situation. Long-term, the whole concept of trucking garbage from across the state to Seneca Meadows is nothing short of insane. It's utterly wasteful in terms of resources. You know, we have got to come up with a better way. And I would hope that we will communicate to our state leaders, folks going to NYSEC. You know, we need a long-term solution that's a whole lot better than the short-term fix.
Thank you, Will. And Pam?
Yes, I guess I would just make one comment about the Frank's example. A farmer going from Interlaken to Whitney Point is driving within the region. It is not somebody who's driving up to Whitney Point and then and making the choice between going up 81 or going west on 79. It is that I think that's a there may be examples, but I do not believe that farmer would have to change one scintilla of his route plan. But the one thing I wanted to just point out also is that after the 45-day comment period, it doesn't instantly go into effect, unfortunately. In my view, there is a group that looks at all of the comments that are submitted, and then they will make a determination if there are any major issues that have been raised. The chances of that happening, I am told, are fairly slim, because this has been vetted quite thoroughly. And then the only other thing I wanted to say was that there is a preferred way to communicate to DOT. They mostly want you to email them. Second is to write, and third choice is to call them. So if you could try and respect that wish, it would be appreciated.
And I think I saw Mike Hattery's hand.
Yeah, I want to thank Frank for the work that he's done on ferreting out the kinds of problems with something that looks like a sledgehammer when another tool is needed, and it might, in fact, damage other things because you're using a sledgehammer. So thanks for your work on this.
Are we ready to vote? This is in favor of revised Resolution F. All in favor?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And opposed? 2 opposed. It passes 11 to 2. Thank you very much. I think there's no further report from Planning, Development, Environmental Quality.
Yeah,
that's it. Thank you. We'll move on to Budget, Capital, and Finance Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you very much. Public Forum, TCPL, Board Warner Room, 7 to 9 on Monday. Next expanded budget committee meeting is 9:22, 5 to 8. I think the expanded budget committee meetings have been going along fairly well. One got a little lengthy, but I think that was a scheduling problem that I didn't see and should have been smarter about putting two big departments like that in the same night. And then hopefully in the future we can, we would change that. But I think it's been going fairly well, and we're into the process, and I appreciate all the effort and of the legislators and staff who've been involved in this, and you're all trying to follow the rules. Thanks for doing that.
Jim, I just want to apologize that this week and next week I will be late to meetings because, as I was today, because at the hospital I work at, our state regulators that only show up every the one only shows up every 2 years, the other right. one shows up only every 3 years.
The dust boy.
Yeah. Are here this week and next week, and so I apologize.
Okay. I accept.
We'll be better after.
I think there may be a way you can get is it CDs of the DVDs of the meeting. Okay. And if people have suggestions about motions based on some of the presentations, please get them to Jim or Norma so they can begin to schedule topics and present. Follow up staff to be there for the voting meetings when they come up in meeting 7 and 8.
Thank you, Mark, for that.
On to Public Safety Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
We will meet next Monday about the same time as the Rules Committee, as usual. At 2:30 on September 21st, and Public Safety Committee members, your packet's in your mailbox, so please pick it up, and I hope you'll really take time to open it up and read it ahead of time. The main item on the agenda will be the task force report from the assigned counsel public defender task force, and Michelle has copy for you the first 26 pages, which are the meat of it. It reads very quickly. They're like, it's like double space, so it's big margins. It reads very well and quickly, and I really hope we will have time and everybody's having read through it so we can talk about in some detail about the recommendations and a resolution about adopting it at the committee level. So that's the main thing next Monday.
Thank you, Martha. Any questions? Frank Proto?
Martha, last month we were asked at Dina Bodner's request to submit questions and anything that we'd like to have included in her review of those segments of the alternatives to incarceration programs that she's looking at. At some point, can we sort of get an update on what was included and maybe where she stands on the review?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
If there's no further questions, I have no more committee reports. Carol?
I want to know if it's going to be, if page 1057 is going to be on the test.
No. I think we're ready.
And actually, Michelle copied that section, so you don't even have to bring the whole thing. You can have just the section that we're going to really be talking about.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Frank Proto.
Clarification?
Sure.
On the email address and the ways to reach DOT, can Kathy make those available to us?
Sure.
Thank you.
Ready to move on to minutes? Who'd like to move the minutes of August 18th meeting? Jim Dennis moves them. Greg Stevenson seconds. Ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That is unanimous. Thank you. Would like to move to go into executive session for purposes of real estate and litigation. Nathan Shinagawa moves. Dooley Kiefer seconds. We do not expect to come out of executive session with any action. All in favor of going into executive session?
Oh, wait a minute, there's another topic, too.
Yeah, I said litigation and real estate.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
All in favor of going into executive session?
Aye.
Any opposed? We'll take a 5-minute recess to break down the cameras.
Right.